What's up, everyone? This is Joe, episode 126 of the SML Podcast. We have another special interview show today. We'll be talking with Jamie Tucker of Asteroid Base about their new release, Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time. And we'll also be talking to Mike from Golden Ruby Games about their title, Extreme Exorcism. Both games are out now. Both games are great. You should go pick them up. And be sure to check out our other episodes this week for more interviews and, of course, our usual stupidity. Plus, as a special bonus, this episode has music from the brand new Viking Guitar EP of covers, which you absolutely should not miss. But for now,
this is the SML Podcast.
What's up, everyone? This is Joe. Another one-on-one interview today from Golden Ruby Games is Mike. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi. My name is Mike Christatos. I am the, head of production over at Golden Ruby Games. And we are about to come out with our fourth game. It's called Extreme Exorcism, coming out pretty much for all the consoles on Wednesday.
Nice. Tell us a bit about the game. For someone who may have never heard of it or doesn't know what it is, give us your best sales pitch on what the game is.
So the tagline that I try and use when I'm trying to pitch the game is, Extreme Exorcism is a game where everything comes back to haunt you. You know, I tried to work in that whole angle of ghosts and haunting and all that stuff. But it's basically, it's a love letter to like those old arcade classic games where high score was kind of the main focus and challenge was the biggest hurdle. It's a arena platformer game where you are essentially hunting ghosts in a haunted house. And as you progress, you kill the first ghosts, pretty straightforward. We give you all these really simple and great weapons like shotguns and harpoon guns and rocket launchers and stuff. So it's really easy to kill that first ghost. And then when the round will start over, and there'll be a new ghost, and that ghost is copying everything that you did the round before. So he'll use all the same weapons that you used and move exactly the same way, use the same rocket launcher, use the same sword, whatever. So you really have to start thinking about the way that you play. And then once you kill that ghost, we add another ghost, so we just keep adding the chaos until you can't handle it anymore. And it's a bit more of a play, too, on recent FPSs where shooting wildly into the air is kind of a reward for a lot of players. And in this game, it's kind of holding back the violence is actually better for you to a certain extent because it gives you less to deal with down the line.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was playing it, that I would try killing this enemy and it would take me a couple shots. And when I finally succeeded and the next round started, I was getting shot at like crazy because I shot at a ghost like crazy, and it would come back and bite you on the ass a bunch.
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing, too, because when we were in the middle of development, we wanted to kind of come up with a good enough AI to compete with players. But Andy is the main programmer on the game, Andy Wallace, we really couldn't figure out that perfect AI, for the game. So in the meantime, we threw in, that copied everyone's moves, and we realized that people actually screw themselves up more than we ever could. They're their own worst enemy to a certain extent. So we kept it in. It was really just kind of fortunate that we figured it out like that, and less work on our end too.
I think it's pretty cool that something you threw in as a temporary solution to the AI ended up becoming the best course of action.
Yeah, and it actually affected the way the whole kind of aesthetic of the game, because originally we made a very quick game in about 3 weeks called King of Clones, where it kind of made a little sense if you thought about it. It was you were just killing clones of your past self. But as we tested it, no one really kind of got the aspect of that, what was actually happening in the game. So we went back and we tried to think of other games that did that well. And we realized that Mario Kart did a perfect example of, playing the ghost mode where you actually fought against a ghost, raced against a ghost version of yourself. And once we threw in that word ghost, I think people kind of pick that up a little bit faster. And then we leaned in hard to the whole haunted house aesthetic, and Extreme Exorcism was born.
I think it's a great idea. People can deal with AI, and people can complain about difficulty of AI all they want, but when they got to play against themselves and they're getting killed by some asshole who's just shooting wildly, they only have themselves to blame on this.
Exactly. And it's almost like a reverse too, because we allow for a multiplayer as well. So you can bring up to three other friends into your co-op game, and like every other game, adding more people should be easier, but the more people you add, the more you have to deal with. So your friends are actually more of a hindrance, but you can actually work up, if you're really great and get some teamwork going, you can actually progress a lot further than you could on your own. It's just having to pay attention to what your friends are doing as well as what you're doing. So it's an interesting mechanic when I see it as a multiplayer game. But I think people, when they want to play multiplayer, they tend to go for the deathmatch setting, which is a lot more straightforward. Just kill your friends.
Yeah. And I think the co-op thing, it puts like a whole new twist on friendly fire.
Yeah, say the least.
So I was online yesterday, and I sent out a little call for emails saying that we would have you on the show. And I actually got two emails in with some questions for you. I figured Before we get any further in, I'll take care of these questions first so I don't end up asking what they ask. Our first email is from our co-host Pappy, who is military and doesn't have the time to do this right now. So he asked, first question, what led to the idea of having the enemy steal all your sick moves? Insert the fact that Pappy is terrible at video games, and now he said that if he were to actually do something awesome, the ghost would probably use it to murder his face 800 times.
Well, I think it speaks more to Pappy if he's like actually really, he's really good at games, if he gets killed a lot. So he's not that bad if he fails a lot.
Oh, he's not good at games. That was him admitting the fact. Like, he wrote that entire thing. He fully admits that he's terrible at games. He's good at like first person shooters, but pretty much anything else, he sucks. He's just,
yeah. It definitely is a learning curve for sure. But where we kind of came up with that, I think I touched on it a little earlier, is just we wanted to make a game. You know, that we were very influenced by, you know, Super Crate Box and Towerfall and all that stuff, all the, you know, recent couch co-op games that have been coming out. And we wanted to make a game that just had like a lot of crazy weapons, but just putting in a lot of crazy weapons doesn't really differentiate us from anyone else. So we kind of wanted, like I said, to make those weapons almost a hindrance instead of a helpful. You know, we give you, you know, towards the end, one gun that shoots a giant slow-moving bullet that passes through everything, which wipes out. It's like a giant bullet bill. It's the fat gun, we call it, and it wipes out a lot of ghosts. But then you have to deal with a giant bullet that's slow-moving throughout the entire stage. And so we just kind of wanted to be like, that's the ghosts are really just how good you are, and it's like that anime training sequence. You can only train against yourself so long before you or something.
Yeah, that kind of touches on his second question. He says, since the ghosts learn from the protagonist, how difficult does this game get on a scale of Hannah Montana the game to Battletoads?
Well, Hannah Montana was pretty hard on a different level, I think. But
on a mental level.
On a mental level. I don't know, it's hard to gauge because, you know, if you're prepared for it, I mean, I've seen people, you know, we base it, the score on rounds and number of ghosts you've killed. So how good you are, I guess you can see your score. And I've seen people kind of rack up, get past like round 20, round 30 and go strong. You really just have to kind of get into the swing of things, and make like a whole plan for yourself and like going forward, know where you're going to herd the ghosts. Making use of like the Extreme Exorcism, the titular weapon, actually eliminates all the ghosts from the board. So, you know, I'd say it's closer to Battletoads if you're not, you know, super prepared for it. But, you know, if you're really good and you kind of have a going with a plan, then pretty much even, you know, road for most skilled players, I'd say.
I hear that. It seems like the more you plan ahead, the better you can be. But if you just go in, run and gun, you're kind of screwing yourself there.
Yeah, but there is something fun about kind of emptying your it's, we give you infinite ammo, and it's one hit, one kill.
Yeah.
So kind of going crazy is really fun, and especially when you're down to your last life and you've already hit the high score for to unlock the next weapon and the next level. So you just kind of, you know, do the whole, you know, chaotic aspect and see how you can handle it to a certain extent. Nice. So I like doing that too.
Nice. Before I jump on to the second email, you mentioned crazy weapons. I know that there's standard, like, machine guns, shotguns. You mentioned a harpoon. What are the craziest weapons that are in the game?
You know, we have a lot of standard, I guess, shooting weapons. You know, we wanted to throw in a good chunk of weapons that when people pick them up, they wouldn't be surprised of how they reacted. But at the same time, it's, you know, like the shotgun, you know, is going to give you a bit of a pushback and have like more of a cone formation or like a scattershot formation. And like a single gun will just shoot one bullet. But like I said, we have the fat gun, which is like a giant bullet bill. We have the fireball, which is this small little ball of fire that travels across the bottom of the stage and just keeps going back and forth. One of my favorites is the ricochet gun. This like ball of energy that travels slowly forward, and then if it hits a barrier, it bounces a random direction. Even like if a ghost gets that, it's not going to be the same when the ghost fires it as opposed to when you fired it. So it's almost a little bit more chaotic.
Oh, and that's then on brutal. Top of
that, yeah. And then on top of that, you can carry up to 3 weapons at a time. So you can really kill a lot of ghosts, but you know, it's again more stuff you have to deal with. But I like playing with different weapon combinations because every weapon fires in a different direction and a different rate and a different speed. So you can throw like, we have a throwing knives weapon that goes in front and behind the player. And then we have a lightning spell, which goes above and below the player, and shuriken, which go diagonally below the player. And that's kind of my favorite combination because you get all the directions at once when you fire.
Nice.
But it's also, again, very, very challenging once you have to deal with that later.
Yeah. So what didn't make the game? Did you have any weapon ideas that were just a little too batshit crazy for the game?
When we started, actually, it wasn't so much weapons, but like power-ups, because that's how we were thinking about the game, not so much, you know, everything was a weapon. So we would have things like a shield or like jumping boots or, you know, slowing down time at a certain area. And it kind of increased from the chaos. You know, we said if we're going to do a chaotic game, we want to lean in hard. So we really just took those away. Like we took away more passive weapons and saved the only passive weapon we really have that's never going to damage you is the, oh, sorry about that. I don't know. My computer just noticed me about something. The one crazy thing about the extreme exorcism is that, you know, it makes you invulnerable and kills all the ghosts, but then the ghosts can't use that the next round. So it's really the one that you should be going for each round, but you can only get that after you kill a certain amount of ghosts.
Nice. So I have a personal question. Since Pappy asked about difficulty between Hannah Montana to Battletoads, I want your opinion on this. If someone has only beaten the Game Boy version of Battletoads, does it count that they can claim that they beat Battletoads?
On a technical level, yes. But on a, you know, moral level, no.
All right, because he would brag about that for quite a while. It's like, yeah, I beat Battletoads. I'm pretty good at gaming. It's like, oh, what version of Battletoads did you beat? The Game Boy version.
I think it's a little unfair, too, because there's definitely, you can play Battletoads with, like, your little brother in front of the TV on your Super Nintendo or whatever. But I think the real challenge is if you can beat Battletoads on the arcade cabinet at your local bowling alley with, like, 5 quarters. Like, that's the real, or 1 quarter. That's the real challenge that everyone needs.
1 quarter? Good Lord. How sadistic are you?
Well, that's the real mark of a true gamer. They can do that.
I don't think anybody could beat the arcade version on a single quarter.
Especially when, like, the joystick probably gets, you know, ripped out after the first biking level. situation or hoverboard level, whatever it was.
Yeah. Plus, we know those arcade cabinets have to be how old. I don't even want to know what kind of gunk is smeared all over those buttons after all these years.
Yeah, definitely someone at least has punched the screen and cut their hand, and you don't want to know what's on there.
There's blood all over those buttons. Blood. I'm sure there's urine. Some kid probably picked his nose. There's boogers all over those buttons.
It was emphasis on battle. You know, it's like a true war over at the Battletoads cabinet.
Have you picked up Rare Replay with Battletoads on it yet?
I have not, because I don't want to torture myself. I actually want to finish the game.
It has both the NES and the arcade versions of Battletoad on there. And the arcade version, thankfully, has free play, so ultimate credits on there. It's still a lot of fun to play. The NES version, even with a rewind feature available in Rare Replay, I cannot beat Battletoads on the NES.
And I think that speaks back to my original point in kind of how we were trying to build Extreme Exorcism as a game that challenged you, in that you look at a game like Battletoads, it's gone down in history as one of the more challenging games to date, and people are still talking about it. You know, people are still buying copies of it. Still, you know, and not to say that Extreme Exorcism is ever going to live up to that hype. I mean, hopefully it will at a certain point. But, you know, I think there's something to be said in this day and age about games that are really challenging and that kind of make players focus on completing the task. You know, we talk about Dark Souls now as, I think, the current example of, you know, how hard a game can really be and how unforgiving it can be. And, you know, we want you to have fun playing our game, but we also want you to remember that it takes a little bit of skill and you should be proud of it once you finish the game.
That kind of leads to another question that we like to ask our guests. We usually ask what games you're playing to, like, calm down and, like, just decompress from work when you're working on a game. And you'd be surprised. We've already had two people in the past 2 weeks or so. One answered Dark Souls 2, and the other answered Bloodborne. And kind of as a runner-up, we had a third mention Lords of the Fallen, which is that Square Enix published kind of Dark Souls light game.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Like, how do you relax to shit like that?
I don't know. I could not. I get a little stressed. I'm currently playing Metal Gear Solid, which I feel like is in sort of that same vein, because you can get caught a lot, and if nothing's more embarrassing, like after you fail a mission three times, they say, "Do you want to use the chicken hat?" And you're like, "No, I don't want to use the chicken hat. I know what I'm doing. It's just that stupid guard was not there last time."
Shut up, game. I'm not a chicken.
Exactly. But yeah, I can understand that, you know, just kind of focusing on one task, because, you know, life throws all that crazy stuff at you on a regular basis. It's like, okay, I have to get across this bridge. How am I going to do that? And I have multiple ways of doing it, but I know what my goal is, and it's very straightforward. So I've been playing Metal Gear, and then when I get too frustrated with that, I switch back to Splatoon, because I like being able to just slowly level up my squid and, you know, take out some aggression on, you know, the Japanese players when I wake up in the morning.
I've heard nothing but amazing things about Splatoon, and I've yet to give it a shot. I just picked it up recently. Best Buy had a sale where if you picked up Super Mario Maker, you could save $20 on another certain Wii U game, and Splatoon was one of them. And if you have that 20% discount, you save even more. So I ended up picking up Splatoon for like $32.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, it's a really fun game. It's just really colorful and fun and bright. And I don't know, I'm just a sucker for those type of games that are very kid oriented to a certain extent. I mean, I know it's not necessarily meant for kids, but when it doesn't care about bright colors and being cute and weird, I really just like games kind of going like that. And I don't know, it just reminds me of games that I wish I had growing up and enjoyed a lot. And it's still challenging, you know, you can still really get skilled, and they give you enough of a good, you know, arsenal of different weapons to kind of learn and master, which I, of course, enjoy as well.
Nice. I have no idea what is happening, but I think the Google call is getting kind of crappy. Okay. Your voice, it sounded like a demon robot was trying to talk to me.
Well, I do have a confession to make about being a demon robot, but
Go figure. Yeah, I'll hang it up and call it right back, and we'll see if that fixes the issue.
Okay.
If I could figure out how this program works. Okay, here it is. There, hang up. So, an apology to the listeners. Skype is actually having problems, so I am using Google Hangouts, and I'm hoping that this fixes everything.
How do I sound?
Still sounds the same, so I'm going to try closing my program and reopening it.
Okay.
All right, hold on just a sec. So, yeah, listeners, I apologize for this, kind of. I don't care that much. It's not like I like you people. But while we're waiting, we are on Twitter now, so you can look for the SML Podcast at the SML Podcast on Twitter, and you can talk to us that way. Let's see, blah, blah. I'm going to have to actually edit this for one.
I'm good.
That still sounds the same, but whatever. I can still understand you.
All right.
It might work itself out in the end anyway, so... Yeah.
I mean, you sound great on my end. I don't know. Maybe I should hang up and come back in.
If you want.
That. Yeah, I'll try that. Hang on. Can't hurt, right?
Oh, this is fantastic.
Okay. Do I sound like a robot?
No, you sound much better now. Wow, I'm actually going to have to edit a podcast for once. That's kind of weird.
Wow. Okay. Glad I be the first of many.
Oh, it's a special day here at SML that I actually have to go in, cut out some dead space. Because normally when stupid shit goes wrong on the show, we'll leave it in. We're lazy. Like, a friend showed up at my door when I was doing an interview with the guys behind Quest of Dungeons. And I just threw, like, an intermission song there as I answered the door.
That's funny.
Because we're lazy. Yay. So, I might as well go into the second email. It's from our friend of the show, Sean Lynch. He says, "Dear Golden Ruby Games, first off, let me just say that Extreme Exorcism is easily one of the best-named video games to have come out this year, and it is equally addictive. The game is certainly equal parts fast-paced action, on-screen chaos, and round-by-round strategy, and I absolutely love it for that reason. What was your main inspiration for the game, especially the concept of having ghosts mimic your actions from the previous turn?"
Well, first I have to say thank you for those kind words. I appreciate that. It like I said before, it came back from that, you know, ghost mechanic that we were trying to copy. It started as just this, you know, very simple AI that we wanted to use for the time being, and then it turned into something really great. We played around a lot with, you know, how challenging we can get. We actually have a lot of challenges in the game as well, 50 different challenges that players can attempt. And then we play around a lot with, you know, how many ghosts come out. We have one where when you kill a ghost, it explodes, so you have to get away from it. So we kind of like to... We had a lot of different things we wanted to put in the game, and we tried to keep it simple for the main game, and then threw in all of our ideas for challenges in deathmatch settings, essentially.
Nice. His second question, he says, "Also, is there any chance of expecting any more of your games making their way to console platforms? While I have not played your other three games, I have to admit they sound like a blast, and they continue the amazing names such as Hermit Crab in Space."
It's interesting, actually, because we built a lot of our games with the console in mind, specifically. One of our first games was called Worm Run, and it's for iOS. And we built it specifically because endless runners were a big thing at the time, but we didn't like... We actually, on a personal level, we despised on-screen D-pads and buttons. It took up real estate because your thumbs are big. And we spend a lot of money as developers, you know, building this game through art and, you know, sound and all this stuff that we don't want you obscuring most of it with your thumbs. So we developed a control scheme specifically with a touchscreen in mind. That's not to say it couldn't work on like a console or something, but it kind of takes away from that challenge that we had built in, because we have you swiping every time you want to move the character, and that kind of adds to the chaos as this giant worm is coming down the mine shaft to try and kill you. And then Hermit Crab in Space was kind of the same thing. You know, we actually had entered a contest with Sony here in New York at IndieCade East. It was just kind of part of their PlayStation Mobile development process, and they kind of wanted to find new and cool games. And it was a game jam at IndieCade East for like 3 days. And me, Andy, and Andy's partner Jane, and our artist at the time, Nick, we all kind of went in and tried to, you know, make a game that was fun for the Vita specifically by utilizing the touchscreen and the buttons at the same time. And that's kind of how we made Hermit Crab in Space. So again, those games could potentially come to consoles down the line, but they were really meant for the consoles that they're on right now.
Nice. I am nice. Really, I'm curious, really to curious to know. Whoa, I'm getting whoa, echo now.
Uh-oh.
I think it's better now. That was out of nowhere. I just heard myself yelling back to me over my headset. So
I'll mute myself while you talk. How about that?
What is Hermit Crab in Space? Because that sounds absolutely insane, and I'm curious to know what the hell that thing is.
Well, Hermit Crab in Space, the prompt for the, if I remember correctly, the prompt for the game jam was Evolution. And then, of course, we took the logical route of making a space shooter where you are a hermit crab piloting it. It was kind of, we were going with the idea of a hermit crab kind of building its own shell, but then also like a space, but, you know, fighting other hermit crabs for more of those shells. So basically it's, you can build a ship out of these cubes, and as you, and you assign buttons on the Vita to whatever part of the ship you want to control. So it's like, we have shields, we have guns, we have, you know, all the stuff. And then when you attach it to your ship, you have to assign a button to it. So you can assign all of your engines and all of your guns to the triangle button, but they'll all fire at the same time. So you kind of have to build a ship, kind of like the gummy ship from Kingdom Hearts, the original one. Kind of have to build a ship with your play style in mind. Again, kind of us realizing that you can be your own worst enemy, and like, you build it yourself, but it's also, you have yourself to blame for building a crappy ship. But yeah, and then you have like 5 levels you have to get through to get to the end. You have to fight all these space pirates that are trying to kill you, and then they get stronger, you know, components that you can shoot off and add to your ship. And you can get this giant warship towards the end if you want, or still try and stay nimble and small, because we add every cube added mass to the ship. So the bigger you are, the slower you are, but the more hit points technically you have.
Nice. That's so pretty cool.
It's a fun little game. I don't know if you can still pick it up, though, because I know that PlayStation Mobile went down a couple months back. I think there's still a way for you to find old PlayStation Mobile games, though. And you might be able to download it on, I forget what it was, like on some Droid devices as well. So, I don't know. If someone can find a good link to it, then please let me know. But I'm not sure. It's a very easy way to download the game at this point. And, you know, it was more of just like a way to kind of, as a developer, kind of get our foot in the door at Sony. You know, people took us a little bit more seriously because we developed the game on the Vita. But yeah, I really loved that game. It was like, it's our little unknown game for a while. And I don't know. It's really great. I like it.
Well, if it ever makes its way to an Xbox platform, I will pick it up immediately.
Good to know.
Yeah, we are definitely more Xbox fans on our show. We, all three of the hosts on here, we own the Xbox One. I'm the only guy with a PS4, and I have had a horrible history with the PS4. So I do love my Vita, though, so I'll have to see if I could somehow track that game down on the Vita.
Yeah, a funny story, though, is because at the end you're trying to get back home to your father, kind of very a la Star Fox. You meet your crab dad with a mustache. It's essentially the exact same. Because I drew all the characters in MS Paint for the game jam, so I'm not an artist by trade, to say the least. But I just took the original hermit crab image. I just put a mustache on him.
I need to see that image.
I think there's definitely a trailer out there for sure. But we forgot to make the father ship invulnerable at the end. So players were so like war torn that if they saw the ship, a lot of them would fire at the father ship, which would essentially break me. But it was very telling because this poor little hermit crab, she had gone through this horrible experience through like horrible, like the galaxy to try and get back home. But she's so, you know, affected by the violence that she kills her own father upon finding him. It was very, very touching and very scary at the same time.
Oh my God, that's fantastic.
Yeah, we took that out to say the least, but I was like, maybe we should keep that in. It's like, it's a commentary on how war affects children or something.
It's a hidden ending.
Yes.
It's a bonus ending. So yeah, I think the world needs Hermit Crab in Space HD remix.
Maybe it does. I don't know if the world is ready though.
I think to hell with the world. They need it whether they know it or not.
All right. Well, at least we have one Batman in this fight.
I will absolutely pick that one up. So tell us about you.
Not much to say, really. I just kind of really like video games, and I saw a lot of games that I wanted to make or just wanted to work on. You know, a lot of like I've played games since I could move my thumbs in different directions, so you know, it was kind of like this thing I almost fell into. You know, I started Golden Ruby about 3-4 years ago with Andy, and it was just the two of us. And I wouldn't recommend just starting your own game company unless you don't like making money for a couple of years and don't like health insurance for a couple of years. You know, it's challenging. It takes a lot of time and effort, and it was great for me at least because I had a lot of loved ones that were very supportive and encouraging for me to pursue this. And it was tough, but I enjoyed it, and I kind of, you know, I partnered with Andy to start Golden Ruby, and we really just saw that we had a very similar mindset and kind of wanting to make games that, you know, almost said something or challenged something, or at the very least, like, took a control scheme and flipped it on its head, because I feel like that's how we progress the industry. You know, we can make another Call of Duty game, but what's different the next time around? Like, I don't like make the same Madden game, but what's different the next time around? What's adding to the experience? How are you making it a better game? Like someone like me who doesn't play like a lot of sports games, I can play Madden and be like, wow, that's an awesome mechanic, or hey, the AI. Find that is really interesting, or I would have never thought to put the UI like that. You know, something that just kind of challenges everyone to take what they want from it and kind of make something better. It's kind of how we've been running things, and I think it's working. I hope it's working.
I hope it's working better than Google Hangouts is working, because you got that whole demon robot voice going on again.
I guess I will sign out again and sign back in.
All right, let's try this one more time.
All right, hang on.
Oh, my Lord. So, yeah, Google Hangouts fucking sucks. Jesus. Oh, my Lord. I've never had so many issues trying to do an interview with someone than I have with this. This is just... Skype, why aren't you working? You son of a bitch in Skype. You son of a bitch. You son of a bitch. All right, let's try this one more time.
How do I sound?
Better again. So obviously, Google Hangouts is not the best choice to use when doing interviews.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell's going on with Skype, but whatever. Ah, Skype, Microsoft, you have let us down for the day.
Yeah, maybe we should have done it on our Xbox Ones.
I don't have a way to record that, though. I'm running like an iPad and a microphone into a mixer, into the computer, recording that, and just...
Sounds complicated.
It sounds decent in the end, as long as Google Hangouts doesn't transform you back into your demon robot form.
Yeah, it's a secret I'm trying to keep.
I'd say I'd edit it out, but I already have to do too much work on this episode. So can't help you there. Your secret is out. The world knows you're a demon robot. So YOLO, I guess.
YOLO.
Yo laughed. You only live a few times. Yo laughed. So what made you get into gaming anyway? Like what convinced you to be like, you know what? Screw a day job. I'm going to make video games.
I think it was just, I had been working in publishing for a while. I worked at Marvel Comics, actually, here in New York for like almost 2 years. And they let me go. Yeah, I loved it there. And again, to preface, I loved working there and it was a great company. But it was one of those things where, you know, budget cuts happened and I was the last one in, the first one to go. I was, you know, young, in my early 20s, so I could survive that. But it was just, you know, publishing in New York is a different beast altogether. And I was like, you know what? I want to try making games. So, you know, I just said I was going to do it. And that's kind of how it started, as weirdly as that sounds. I had some seed money to start, and it was really easy to kind of, you know, get things off the ground for the first 6 to 7 months. Which, you know, money is always a great way to start a business. And it was just kind of the whole idea, you know, my 5-year plan was just keep making games, try and make a game a year and build up a library so that, you know, people will take it seriously. And, you know, I think that's what helped us. You know, Extreme Exorcism wouldn't be getting on all these consoles had we not gotten the help from our publisher, Ripstone, because I think it's kind of like publishing in a way. Where you have to score a company like Ripstone or someone to help you get it onto all of these consoles. Because had they not done that, we wouldn't be getting everywhere we are right now. So that's kind of, if there's any advice I can give to people who want to make games, is kind of have an end goal. I mean, like, you can totally make games as like an art piece and, you know, to say something. But if you want to make games to make a living or to make money, you kind of have to play this game, no pun intended, of, you know, building. Yeah, you got that. I'm an English major, by the way. to just kind of build yourself up in the eyes of those who matter to a certain extent, and, you know, prove that you're reliable and that you make a good product and that you're, you know, going to deliver on time, essentially. So, you know, just keep working, essentially. Don't, you know, like, you can worry about, you know, am I going to be able to do this next year? Yeah, you can tear your hair out stress-wise doing that, but the more important thing is just to kind of focus on, hey, what do I have to do today? What do I have to do tomorrow? And just get that done. And somehow you're 4 years later making a game for Xbox One. So
nice. So for that whole game a year thing that you're doing, is this your game of the year? Is your Extreme Exorcism 2015's game?
Yes, it's 2015's game for sure. It was also part of 2014 as well. I think we found out the hard way of developing for all the consoles at the same time. You know, you definitely get more coverage that way, but you spend more time doing it. Each console was its own beast. You know, I still have a lot of the dev kits in our office that we need to, you know, either ship back because it costs money to hold on to them, or, you know, do we decide to keep, you know, it's like wrestling with those things. Like, for one, I think the Wii U, the developers can get it for free for like 8 months. But if you don't return it after that 8-month period, you get charged like $3,500.
Wow.
And, you know, then you have to wrestle as a company. Like, am I going to make another Wii U game? Is it worth spending that money? Or do I send it back and try and save money? And then when I really need it, when I build up that $3,500, I can repurchase it or something. Not purchase, but, you know, spend the money you need to rent it for that time. Yeah. And I think that's what also pays to, like, become a real company as opposed to just hanging out with your friends and trying to make games, which is not bad. But, you know, a lot of these companies like Sony and Nintendo and Microsoft require you to have an actual address that's, you know, where they can ship the box to safely with all of their very expensive equipment, and that they know that it's an actual office space and not some random house. Because you actually have to prove that there's a security system in the building or that you're keeping these things safe, which I understand. But, you know, that's also a bit of a hurdle for a lot of people, I think, who want to just make games.
Nice. So what is your plan for the 2016 game?
Oh, we haven't really thought about that right now. It's we kind of just finished the whole process of working to do all the systems a few weeks ago, and that was a little bit before Labor Day. So, you know, with this whole thing, we're just kind of taking it easy right now and seeing how well Extreme Exorcism does, really. You know, I think that's going to dictate where we go from here, essentially.
Well, I'm pulling for you guys. I'm having a lot of fun with Extreme Exorcism myself, and I'm hoping that it's kind of a weird name for a game. Like, people might hear the name and be like, Extreme Exorcism? Is it survival horror? I hope they actually check out the game and, like, watch a video or a trailer of it so they get a better understanding of what it is instead of just seeing the name and thinking that it's, like, Slender or Outlast or something like that.
Yeah, that was a little intentional on our part, too, is, you know, we wanted to get, Exorcism was definitely part of the whole game mechanic. It was a big, important part of the game. But we also wanted to, around the time we were coming up with the concept of the game, I was playing Gone Home a lot. And so I was like, what would happen if we made Gone Home, but it was actually set in the time period Gone Home was, you know, happening? And, like, that would be the game that, you know, would be Gone Home, but... you know, for that time period in the early 90s, it would be very extreme and focused on blowing things up and very turn. And so that's kind of how May is styled. She's very much like, she likes cheesy action, 90 action movies. And, she's strong and independent. Like, you know, all the Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Xena Warrior Princess and stuff. So she likes all that stuff, but she's like also a student in debt with a sociology degree that she can't seem to find work for, so she hunts ghosts instead.
Nice. It's a good profession. I mean, if it pays the bills.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think it would be better if she didn't have to, like, you know, ramen all the time to keep her energy levels up, but yeah. You know, she's enjoying it. It's a job.
I wonder what kind of tax forms there are to be an exorcist.
I think it's a lot under the table. The table's floating, though, during the seance, so it's a little easy.
That makes sense. Man, floating tables. What'll they think of next? All right, well, it's been about 40 minutes or so that we've been talking. I'm not sure how much will be left after we cut out all the technical issues. Well, probably it's a solid 7-minute interview, right?
Yeah.
I do want to thank you for coming on. It was a fun interview for an awesome game. I'm glad that Sean and Pappy sent in some emails. Is there anything else that you want to say about the game?
Not really, except that pick up Extreme Exorcism on September 23rd. It's going to be like $12.99 for all systems. It's going to be on Wii U, Xbox One, PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, and Steam. So pick it up. There's going to be online scoreboards. So, you know, see how well you can do. And I think, you know, I really just want to see people playing together. I don't know, like, you know, doing a Vine or a video or something of people on the couch together, screaming at each other, getting really frustrated at the game, because I'm that, like I said, I'm that evil robot overlord that just likes to see people frustrated with my game.
That's a good thing. Seeing people curse at each other and throw controllers at each other's heads. It's always good. It's always a positive. So this episode will actually be out on a Friday, probably this coming Friday. So the game's already out. So you don't have to wait for anything. Just hop on your favorite system and download the game, as long as your favorite system isn't an Atari Jaguar.
I was speaking to you from the past. I'm actually here in the present right now. I was coming out of my... That's why.
So that was a pre-recorded message that you just played.
Yes.
For today, which is now Friday, when you're listening to this.
Yes, sorry. I'm getting ready for the whole Fallout 4 thing where you come out of the stasis chamber after however many years. So,
oh my god, Fallout 4 is going to be so fucking good.
Yeah, please just play our game for the month of October, and then you can play Fallout 4 and forget about it.
Buy our game now, play it until Fallout comes out, and then you don't even have to touch our game anymore. Just Fallout is out.
Yeah.
That's kind of like how Castle Crashers, with their remastered release, they're like, at least on the Xbox One, it's like, hey, you already know about our game, so we're going to waste our time, our space here, by pimping Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time instead. So buy their game.
Yeah, that's a great game to buy, too, so I don't blame them for saying that.
I'm actually going to be talking with them technically tomorrow, officially later in this episode, quote unquote.
Well, I have to say that's a beautiful game, and they are not afraid of colors, which I love the most about that game. So we need more colorful games in everything.
There we go. The 2016 game from Golden Ruby Games is going to be Super Color Adventure Plus.
Just don't look up our first game, which was called Destroy All Color.
I'm going to look that up.
It's free on the App Store.
So again, that's Destroy All Color by Golden Ruby Games. You could pick that up now.
Yeah, it's a weird little game. I'm not going to say anything else other than that. It's just a weird little game.
Is it just the whole, it's our first game, so give us a pass on that one?
Yeah, pretty much. I thought it was interesting. It's actually, it makes use of the camera and in your smartphone by, you basically play like a Tetris-like game where you have to pick three colors in your immediate environment. Like, you know, we recommend picking like different colors so you can tell the difference. And then it starts the game where you have to, it basically fills up random blocks on this board, and you have to find those three colors that you picked to destroy those blocks, essentially. It's weird, but it's better to play than describe, essentially.
That actually sounds really cool. I'm not going to lie.
It definitely drains your battery pretty fast, so I have to warn you.
I'm guessing it's not on Windows Phone, is it?
No, it's just on iOS.
Well, I have an iPad. I guess I'll have to look for it on there. Yeah, I'm one of those Windows Phone users. I'm one of the 12 out there.
Hey, they need love, too.
I love my Windows. I'm never going to go to anything else as long as I could get a Windows Phone. I love it so much. I just wish more people released Xbox games on it.
Yeah, so,
Extreme Exorcism Windows Phone Edition coming 2017.
2018, 2020, you know, it's just going to keep going down this route. Nice. On the Atari Jaguar, you know.
The Jaguar HD coming out in 2024.
Alien versus Predator versus humans.
Hey, at least it's not Alien Colonial Marines 2, right?
Yeah. As long as you get to play as Ripley, then that's all I care about.
Yeah, that works. All right, well, again, thanks for coming on. Any final words for our listeners?
Enjoy the game.
In the gun!
What's up, everyone? This is Joe. My interview at this time is Jamie Tucker from Toronto. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I work at Asteroid Base, and we just released Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time. As you said, we're based out of Toronto, which is this in Canada, but we have this great kind of indie community here. And I guess you could say like our company and our game kind of came out of that community, just as a, it was like a product of it, I guess.
I think that's one of my favorite things that I've experienced in talking with developers so far with these interviews. No matter who I talk to, where they're from, if they're from Philly, if they're from the Netherlands, whoever I'm talking to says that they have an amazing indie community around them.
Yeah, but ours is the best.
Them's fighting words. I'm going to have to get some other guys back on here and say that you're starting a war here. Mm-hmm. We're going to have turf wars. So, for the people who have never heard of Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time, they don't know what it is, anything about it, give us the sales pitch.
Yeah, it's a co-op, one- and two-player co-op, space, like a platformer kind of inside of a space shooter game. So you play as the astronauts, and that's, you have direct control over your character, and then you run around inside of this big pink spaceship. You're getting attacked by all these different robots and insects, like all at the same time. You got to be able to run around to the different stations. You fly the ship, you shoot turrets. It's like that scene in Star Wars where Luke and Han are running up and down the turrets where they start fighting off TIE fighters. So we kind of wanted to capture that scene with the franticness of that. It's all kind of that all wrapped into one. One kind of space, crazy space game.
Nice. Good description. Mm-hmm. Before I get into too many questions here, I do have an email from one of our co-hosts, since he's not able to be here because he has these things called a job and obligations and grown-up responsibilities. He sent in two questions to ask, and I will get to those right now. He says, first off, the color palette for the game is amazing. Despite the violence of the game, everything is gorgeous and downright happy. So seriously, were you guys tripping on acid when you developed it, or just watching a lot of cartoons?
Yeah, it was definitely like pulling stuff from like Powerpuff Girls or Sailor Moon. We wanted to kind of go with this palette that was kind of, you know, what not what you would think of when you thought of like sci-fi, that kind of genre. We wanted to do something that new, that kind of stood out in that genre. And it was something that like make, you know, have some sort of like accessibility to the game. Where if you're not normally into these like kind of games, it's going to introduce a new audience, especially with the co-op kind of aspect of the game. You're kind of thinking it's the game like you want to play, and then you want to introduce someone to play games with you too. So that was kind of that thought process with the kind of color decisions we made. A lot less drugs, I guess, than you're wanting to hear, but.
Kind of bummer. We like hearing the drug and alcohol fueled stories of developers on our show. So no comment. Drugs, alcohol, any kind of rabble rousing.
Well, we like to keep things nice and simple in Canada.
I admire that. It's a different take from everyone else. His next question, how much time went into just developing all the crazy looks of the characters and enemies? Did your group brainstorm a lot of the designs, or did it just come to you in a flash of inspiration and or acid flashbacks? So he's hung up on acid here.
Yeah.
I would have put it more towards LSD, but, you know.
Yeah. Matt, he's our creative director, and he's got, like, you know, like he finishes a sketchbook like every 2 weeks or something crazy like that. So he has so many sketchbooks just full of like character drawings and that. And it's whenever he's like talking to you on the phone, whenever he's just walking around, he's always got a sketchbook. So
it's just actual natural creativity instead of
he's just like a font of like craziness. Yeah, it's just it just keeps coming. It keeps coming out of him like constantly. He's never not drawing, basically. So
nice. Yeah, my friend is a recovering alcoholic, so he just likes to live vicariously through other people.
Yeah, we have nothing fun going on over here.
So explain this story of lovers.
So the story is, they were having like, there's this power source of, they created the Ardor reactor, kind of to harness the energy of love. And with that, it was between the reactions of love and anti-love. It was kind of harnessing that, but, like all crazy kind of science experiments, things went awry, and the machine broke down and it exploded, and then all of a sudden all this anti-love started kind of spilling out, like radiating out from the Ardor reactor, and so now it kind of started spreading throughout the universe. It started corrupting constellations, and so you have to as a member of the League of Very Empathetic Rescue Space Knots Lovers, if you will,
I love the name, by the way.
You have to go through the universe and kind of collect the pieces that have of this reactor that have that has spread through the galaxy and you know, put things right, return the balance of love and anti-love back to the universe. You know, it's basic like hard sci-fi. So
in a very happy theme.
Mm-hmm.
I know one of the collectibles in the game is collecting all of the, are they space rabbits, space bunnies? Do they have a preference?
They're space friends.
Space friends.
Because they're not just bunnies. There's frogs and foxes and birds. But yeah, they're your space friends, and they've, after the forces of anti-love have kind of taken over their homes, they've locked them up, and so you need to rescue them, and they use their power of love to get you through the next portal, the next part of the galaxy. Because before, like, that's kind of, this Ardor reactor was kind of connecting all these areas together, and anti-love started spreading. They encased these warps in like this crystallized anti-love, so that you need the space friends to be able to unlock it.
Nice.
I assure you, we're on drugs.
Hey, I let the drug stuff go in the past, so. The game, it controls very differently from any other kind of space shooter out there. Between all the different stations on the ship, the heavy emphasis on co-op gameplay, did you ever think that this would be something that would work better with more players, like a four-player co-op or anything like that? Or were you guys happy keeping it a two-player game?
We were kind of happy making it a two-player game just because I think we're kind of finding with Towerfall or maybe some other four-player kind of couch playing games, local multiplayer games. They're only really fun when you have four people to play them with. So we didn't want to have this game that, you know, it's all right if you play it two-player, and then, you know, you really want to just wait until four-player. So we really wanted to emphasize the balance of the game to be playable with two player, so that it wasn't something that, you know, you have to wait for, that you're not going to really get to really play until you have, you know, a whole bunch of people over. So that was kind of what we were thinking of. And then it was the kind of concept of the game is about it being like frantic and running around, and we were finding like with four people, it would just be four people staying where they are, and it kind of took that core, like that essence of our, you know, original intention of the game kind of took that out of it. It's kind of too easy, I would say. Like, if you think about it, that ship probably is built for four people or four more people, but the fun of it is only when only two people are left to kind of run around in it.
I do like how with only two people, it makes you actually think about what you're doing and plan ahead instead of just run and gun everything.
Yeah, and like the two people, they for the most part, they can't just be like existing separately from each other. You kind of have to really know what each other are doing. So with like the kind of franticness, you have to make these kind of game time decisions about whether what you're doing, whether you're gonna shield or whether you're gonna fight, whether you're gonna run away, whether you're gonna do this or that. So it was kind of these experiences we wanted, and we felt like four player would just be too easy.
Yeah, I can see that. I really do like how it is a more methodical yet still frantic game. Like, if you just shoot into a giant group of enemies, you basically screwed yourself because it's too hard to get someone on top and bottom and then left and right, manning the shield in different directions.
It's all about prioritizing. You got to be able to prioritize threats. You got to... there's kind of like I think there's a leap we're asking players to take with that, where their initial kind of thoughts on strategy, on how to play this game, they might be completely wrong. They might think that they have to shoot everything and always worry about everything, where it's kind of like you're kind of like a squirrel at that point, where like if you see squirrels, they're like worried about everything and they look so stressed out constantly. So these players are like, they're just worrying about everything and they're getting stressed out, and then they're just getting like overstimulated, and then I'm sure they're freaking out. But if you kind of are able to triage threats and see things, oh, actually, even though there's three guys on this one side of the ship, they're not actually going to be doing any damage, because you know, you put the shield there and then you don't have to worry about them anymore. And then you only have maybe two gun stations that you have to run between, because there's no threats on the other side. So it's kind of when people start learning to play that way, then the game, I think, completely changes with the kind of play style. And then as we go through levels, we try and play with that aspect, like by introducing like different enemies. Like there's one enemy later on that's like covered in ice, and you can't actually like shoot that enemy unless you use there's kind of these suns around, where if you fire into a sun, it shoots off these fireballs. So you can't even shoot these enemies because they're encased in this ice armor, but you have to shoot the suns to be able to like melt the ice armor, and then you can shoot them. So if you're just flying around and you're trying to deal with everything at once, like you can't even shoot these guys in some certain situations unless you get to a sun. So we just want to keep that kind of enforce that way of playing the game. And, you know, some people, I think, who are saying that it's very hard are kind of not getting that point, I think. I'm just watching the way we've been watching people play on YouTube and that, and kind of interesting to see that.
I was going to ask, the critical reception so far has been outstanding. Reviews are really high. I saw Destructoid gave it a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, that's amazing.
How does that compare to, like, the player's feedback?
We've been playtesting the game for, like, the game's been in development for 3 years, right? And
wow.
For like two of those years, we've been playtesting it. Our feedback along the way has been very, it's been very in line kind of with what we were getting from those reviews. We were expecting that it was going to have a really good response with people, and you know, you're always hoping that people are gonna have a good response to it, but I think the thing that we didn't expect was that people would find it so hard. But that, I think that's the problem with spending so long developing a game, is that we know, as developers, we know every piece of like data in the game. So we know, it's not hard for us to play, but I don't know, even our play testers were still doing very well in our play test sessions. So we kind of underestimated that part with people's reception to it. But I think, I think we did a lot of play testing. So we softened a lot of edges that were kind of in the game before.
Do you think really a lot great. Of the people complaining about the difficulty, do you think it stems to the problem with gamers today, where so many games are so easy and watered down and kind of spoon feed the gamers everything?
We just had a conversation about this yesterday, where Matt just picked up the Toad game for Wii U.
Code game.
I can't remember what it's called. The puzzle Toad game.
Captain Toad.
Captain Toad. Yeah.
I thought you said code and not Toad.
Sorry. Captain Toad. Yeah. Matt just bought Captain Toad, and then Adam just bought Mega Man Legacy Collection, and then so kind of comparing those two games, where Captain Toad is like, it really is really like eases you into that, like it's so like holds your hand through the entire experience. And then in Mega Man Legacy, you're playing these 20-year-old games that are like brutally hard.
Them's my childhood.
Just, yeah same with us. And it definitely, games have, for better or worse, are definitely have different expectations of their players now than back then. And I don't know, it's to do with the fact that there's so many games now. Like when we were playing Mega Man on the NES, it was because we only had like, five games through the entire tee that we owned in NES. We only had a handful of games, so those are the only games that we ever played. So that they were hard was because you spent 100 hours replaying them.
There are so many more games coming out today than there were years and years ago. We could see more games come out in a single week now than a month back then.
So it does ask a lot of your players to kind of get that mastery, but then you want to hold their hand, but you don't want to be like a helicopter parent to them.
I was talking with someone.
They need to make their way through the world sometime at some point.
I was talking with one of the developers of Panarium that's coming out this week earlier today. And we were discussing the difficulty of that game, and we were saying how it's so hard to find a good balance between something that holds your hand and is too easy, and then something mm-hmm. that makes you just say, fuck that, and throw your controller out the window.
There's that sweet spot that exists, and I don't know.
And it's so hard to find these days, too.
Well, our big problem was with kind of with co-op gaming, you're kind of, when two players are really good together, they're kind of, they're really, really, really good. And when two players are really bad together, they're really, 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 really bad. It's kind of like has this multiplicative like function to their skill level. So it's especially hard, I think, balancing that, where one person is really stubborn, or the other player hasn't played games very much, so they don't want to be able to run around. They just want to maybe sit at one station the whole time, and only do that, because that everything else would be too overwhelming for them. So it's really hard to balance that with two people, like when we play, where we don't even really need to, like, our, the way we communicate with each other is kind of what the, your person is doing on screen, because you can anticipate what the other player is doing by just what they're doing. And if they get out of their station and they start running, you know that they're going to run to this station, so you don't have to worry about that. And yeah, it's definitely really, I think, difficult when with that kind of, especially like with that, those kind of things going on with the players.
Now, the multiplayer in the game is just couch co-op, correct?
Yeah.
Was there any discussion about making it an online co-op game?
Yeah, we did look into it. Since we've been developing for, it's been 3 years, about a year and a half ago, we were looking into online. And it was just for, to be able to make like online games, you kind of have to design the game a certain way, like having certain entities in the game, how they communicate to the player, or how they run, like, kind of on the system, and how that's being shown, how that's being rendered, and all that. So we did some tests, and we just saw that it was we didn't have the experience or the budget to be able to, you know, spend another, it would have been like another year probably developing that. Wow. So we've been going through lots of comments from players or people on our forums, and people seem to kind of not understand how hard it is to release a multiplayer game. Or an online game, just because there's so much more involved in it than just pressing the multiplayer button. Like, and we don't have, you know, our team doesn't have that experience. Where you might, like, I believe, like, the Rocket League, like, those guys are, you know, multiplayer experts, and then that's why that game is such a great experience.
Yeah,
multiplayer, because that's their bag. Like, we're not that way as a company. And so it was just like we knew we couldn't budget for that. And then, you know, you're worried about the kind of multiplayer experience that you have. So if we were relying on like matchmaking, like what's to say, like, if you get put in with, because the co-op is such a key factor to the game. Like, what if you get put in a game with someone that's just going to troll you the whole, or they're going to like leave you when you're surrounded or something, like,
just some dickhead who joins random games, gets you into a bad situation, and then bails on you.
Yeah, and you're not gonna have fun at all. So I don't know. It's just all these factors that we kind of had to unfortunately make that decision about a year and a half ago or something, that we desperately wanted to, but it was, you know, we couldn't do it. And the game was, we had been developing the game for a long time at that point already, and we just didn't see the end, you know, when this game would be finished. It was, I think, you know, we've kind of been talking about this game in the public for 2 years now, and we've been getting so much like, when's the game coming out? When's the game coming out? When's the game coming out? And then when we released it, all the collective like response was finally, like, everybody, anything that anyone wrote about the game was finally, it's coming out. So it was just like, yeah, we can't afford to spend another year on the game.
Yeah. Plus, hey, that's what sequels are for, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
Lovers 2, Electric Space Boogaloo.
Boogaloo. Yep.
Yeah, I'm lucky. Having done so many interviews with different developers, I've been able to accept that so many games out there and so many developers want to have an online experience, but it's just not cost effective, or it'll just delay a game too much. But I know there's people out there who just don't get the whole idea of, you can't just like change one, like the word multiplayer and change it to say yes, and everything magically works.
Yeah, well, like, look at GTA 5 and Metal Gear Solid 5. Like, they didn't ship with their multiplayer because they had to, you know, they were still probably working on it while they needed to ship the game.
And then it's like
you ship a multiplayer version, and then what if it's crap? Like, then it just is detrimental to the game experience.
Yeah, it's like every big release that comes out anymore with an online experience, guaranteed the first few days are going to be garbage.
Even Rocket League, they were having server problems because they were so overloaded.
Every single MMO that ever releases, the first week is a shit show because they just can't get any there. No one's ever prepared for it.
I have a friend that he plays World of Warcraft, and just when the newest expansion came out, he talked about like sitting, waiting for 13 hours to be able to log on. He like booked time off work to get into it, and he wasn't happy. But you know, it's not an insignificant piece of development, part of development.
Yeah, I do want to say though, despite the whole lack of online multiplayer. Since I can't play with any of my friends, since I don't really have too many people around me to play with besides my wife, who doesn't really game, and my cats, who haven't learned to hold a controller yet, I love that the AI companion in the game is not an idiot. There are so many games where they'll throw you an AI partner and they'll just like run into a wall or shoot at a ceiling or just be absolutely useless, and the AI in this game is really intelligent and very helpful, especially when you're slowly trying to navigate through a corridor in between two planets and there's a dozen enemies flying after you. You just throw your companion onto a gun and they take care of everything for you.
That's good to hear. I was the one that programmed that the AI for
good job.
And so you're kind of playing with me when you play the game, because like as I was going, like I was definitely trying to like figure out how I was kind of deconstructing how I was playing the game, to kind of like how I assess the threats and how I kind of waited, what's coming at you. So definitely good to hear. Yeah, it was good to hear that it's not crappy playing with the AI, because we were definitely worried about that. But in our playtests, I think people who are playing single player, they definitely, you know, they were kind of rating the game as fun as people who were playing co-op. Like it was definitely, we definitely felt that people were still having fun. I think the nature of the game is kind of different, just because you have to address everything yourself. I like playing it that way. Just because you don't have to worry about anyone else. You just only have to worry about yourself. And it's the only case where your partner does exactly what you tell them to.
I love that when you put them on a machine gun, they'll just spray and pray. Love it. It's so real. Anyone who has a machine gun in a game like that is going to immediately see how wide of a fan they can get with those bullets.
Yeah. Yeah, we tried to make like that. That was so that they kind of are more likely to hit things that around it and hit what you're shooting at. But yeah, we tried to make the dog and the cat, better than any kind of partner you could have, just because we have to overcome like such a big like ask for the player that, you know, they're kind of taking on two people's responsibilities by themselves. So we definitely wanted the partner to be better than someone else in that same situation. And because we were like originally thinking like with the dog and the cats, it'd be funny if the dog was like really stupid, but you know, he was really obedient, but he was like, he couldn't shoot anything. And then we were thinking of the cat would be like really, really good and really like deadly, but it would like just ignore you half the time.
Just like a real cat.
But then that would have just, I think that would have pushed two players too far. We were thinking that like it would be or a turtle or something is funny because it'd be so slow to get anywhere, so you'd have to like pick it up and throw it or something. But
it's
yeah,
like it was, the different it gems in the game. You just pick up your turtle and throw it to a station.
Yeah, throw it on a station. But I think that would have just been it'd been too much. People would have murdered us for that.
Have you guys considered adding any other animals besides a dog and a cat?
Yeah, we actually had thought of that. Like the turtles was one of them when we were kind of going down that road. But we haven't. We're thinking of like a. It'd be funny if there's like a fish in a bowl that kind of had like robot legs that was like running around.
During my email correspondence to get the interview set up, I think that's one of the things I mentioned was that I would have loved to see, or even still, I would love to see you guys do DLC of just additional companions,
mm-hmm.
like an extra companion for a buck. And you have a deer that runs around to the different stations. I think that'd be a great way to add some extra revenue for the game. And mm-hmm. it gives people like me who love stupid options a chance to get that fishbowl with robot legs.
That's funny. We kind of wanted to make sure we covered our two major bases of the cat people and dog people, but it would other animals would probably be really funny.
There you go, free idea your way is DLC companions. Mm. You guys could roll in the money if you just make more. It's like hats in Team Fortress.
Yeah, everyone's favorite pet.
So what did you guys play while you were developing the game? That's a question we love to ask all developers over, I guess you have a lot of time to cover. Over the past 3 years that you've been developing the game, what would you take a break from your game and go play just to kind of decompress or relax?
Well, we were playing Dark Souls. Matt and I were playing Dark Souls during that time.
What is it with developers relaxing with Dark Souls? You are not the first person to say that.
I think I think that's like definitely a developer's game where everyone, when it came out, everyone kind of played it and was just like kind of blown away by the kind of experiences you have. It's like playing the original Zelda all over again, I think. Where it was, you could go anywhere, and not necessarily you should go anywhere everywhere, but you could. And it was just about kind of like exploring
Makes
the game
sense.
as you went. Definitely. That was something we played a lot.
I'm just shocked how many developers say that they like to relax with Dark Souls, Dark Souls 2, Bloodborne. It's just a really surprising answer. And the more I hear it, the more it kind of makes sense that, you're spending all this time on one thing, you could just escape in a brutally hard game to just kind of figure it out and take it at your own pace instead of trying to rush through like a Call of Duty game and a high energy game.
I think when developers play games, they're never like playing a game. Like you never turn that part of your brain off while you're playing the game. So you want to play a game that you can kind of analyze as you're playing. Like I know a lot of people, they'll play a game for 2 hours and then they're done with it, and that's because it took them that long to kind of analyze everything about the game, and then it kind of ruins the game for them after that, right? It was like Telltale game when I first played Left 4 Dead. I think through the first half of it, I was having a really great time because I wasn't trying to analyze it. But then as soon as I started analyzing how all the decisions or the trees like are all being put together, you kind of lost the magic of it. But you're always even playing games is work because you're always just seeing what other people are doing, what decisions they're making. So.
That's really good in-depth answer. That might be one of the best answers we've gotten to that question so far. Mm-hmm. So aside from Dark Souls, what else would you guys play in your downtime?
I played a lot of Crusader Kings 2. Just because of I play that game just because it's like I love history, and it's about like like this alternative history of like the Middle Ages. So I don't know. It's just that game for me is about like me making up my own stories of history as I play through it. So that was my main, like, I would play that, and then, you know, it's 6 hours have passed or something, and I'm in one, my body was in one position, and I'm all like scrunched up in pain, just because I get lost in it. But yeah, that's I like that. I think or Matt and Adam playing these last 3 years. Matt and Adam, they really loved Shovel Knight. They played that a lot.
Yeah, that's probably one of the best games to come out in recent years, and the whole retro, old school kind of renaissance that we've been seeing recently. Shovel Knight's easily at the top.
Yeah, because like Matt described it as when he saw it, he knew exactly what he wanted it to be, and that game was exactly what he wanted it to be. So it was just like, yeah, it was. They made all the right decisions, kind of with what they were trying to accomplish and what they did accomplish. I haven't really played it. I only played it like a couple levels on the Vita, but those two definitely really played the crap out of that game.
Yeah, I love how they handled the Xbox and Sony ports as well, because they didn't just port the game over. They added Kratos with the PlayStation versions, and they added the Battletoads with the Xbox version. It's it's a cool way to treat the gamers for either waiting for the game or rebuying it on another platform.
Yeah.
And yeah. I've bought it on way too many platforms.
Yeah, I think Adam owns it on three platforms. Yeah. Those are kind of... I can think of, like, when we first started working on the game, we played Left 4 Dead a lot, Left 4 Dead 2 a lot at that point. And that was one of our, like, we played that, like, locally co-op with two Xbox 360s, like, connected together.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that was kind of where we were, you know, that was kind of where we got our, how we play co-op games together. So I don't think any of us really play online games that much. It was always like what we would play when we would, you know, get together for a night. So yeah, that was playing that like in 2011, 2012 was kind of led to the beginning of this of Lovers, whole kind of co-op aspect to it.
Nice. How big was the team that worked on the game anyway? I hear you mentioning two other guys. Is that as big as it got, or are there others?
Yeah, there's the three of us. So like Adam was the creative head of creative. Like he did like most of the art, most of the animation, and all those kind of game design decisions. Adam, he was the head of like technical, like we did all the programming, and then I kind of fit in between doing some of our business stuff, doing I guess everything on the game no one else wanted to do. I did like AI and menu programming and a few other systems programming. And then that was sort of the three main team. And then we had Ryan Henwood. He did our music and sound design for the game. So he composed all the music and did all the cool sound effects. And then we had Matt's wife, Emily, too. She's a graphic designer. And so she designed all of our UI design and that. That was kind of the three main people, and then two contractors that kind of helped us out with things that we weren't really good at. So
I'll never stop being impressed by the games that can be done by only a handful of people.
Yeah, it just takes forever.
Are you guys working on something new, or do you think that'll be something that happens in another 3 years?
Yeah, we're not working on anything right now, but we're definitely, Matt's definitely filling sketchbooks with ideas, and we've been talking about the kind of game that we want to work on next. Because, we definitely want to hit the ground running with more ideas. And in the meantime, we're kind of working on supporting lovers with trying to think of what other stuff we can put in it or
DLC companions, I'm telling you.
Yep.
That's money right there. That's money.
We'll have more cats, and then we'll have hats for your cats.
Yes. Oh, my God. That's amazing. Just a bunch of different cat breeds. Oh, man. That's money.
Yeah.
That's serious money in the bank right there.
I take a photo of your cat and then put it in. That'd be funny.
Oh, man. Kinect integration. That'd be fantastic. I could pick my 5 different cats and have a bunch of different companions.
we have things we want to work on. We have stuff with lovers that we still want to work on. For the 3 of us, we are so busy right now. It's like you thought when you release a game that you can kind of breathe a sigh of relief, but it's just been on to the next thing, right? Like immediately after. So yeah, always going.
Nice. How did you guys get tied up with Microsoft with this? Did they come to you? Did you go to them?
We came to them. When they announced that ID at Xbox program, I saw that announcement the day the announcement was made, and then I signed up that day, and we were talking to them within the week. It was just the program seemed perfectly timed for us where we were at in development, and so it was, they had a lot of support for us, and we loved the fact that, you know, we could, like, getting on the console was amazing kind of proposition. So
did you expect Microsoft to champion the game as heavily as they have?
No, we did, like, we didn't expect that at all. Chris Charlo, the head of the program, he kind of really, I think within Microsoft, he definitely, it felt like he was really behind the project. It was just as we were going, it was just, we found out, you know, how much they loved the game and how much they wanted to help us out, and it was pretty crazy.
That's pretty cool to hear. What made you go with Microsoft over checking out Sony or Nintendo or Atari Jaguar?
Yeah. It was kind of that, I guess, that process of talking with Chris and kind of getting that kind of support from him. It was kind of talked to all 3 platforms, and we just got the, you know, the best, I guess, vibe from Microsoft, which is, you know, it's kind of completely different to people's experience, I guess, in the previous generation. They've definitely have changed, like with the ID at Xbox program, they definitely changed the way they work with developers, and it's pretty great. Like, because it's like we're a 3-person company and they're, 30,000 person company. So it's definitely the way their systems are all enabled, like they're meant to be dealing with other giant corporations. And the fact that, like, we're able to kind of interface with them at all is pretty amazing. And it's because they have a team dedicated to talking to inexperienced, pretty inexperienced developers, trying to go through these really, really crazy processes of launching your game. So
yeah, it's good to hear that they're a lot better than they used to be. I know on the 360, The Xbox Arcade team would get a lot of shit because they wouldn't really help developers. There were big fees for like patches and things like that, certifications. And it's good to hear that it's a much better environment now for developers, because I'll fully admit our show, we heavily lean toward Xbox. Out of the three hosts, I'm the only one who has a PS4 or a Wii U. Now my one co-host has a Wii U, but all three of us have Xbox Ones. We're heavy Xbox gamers, and I love seeing all of these games coming to the Xbox One. So I'm thrilled that it came out on the Xbox One. Are you in a situation where you're allowed to release it on other consoles down the line, or are you guys happy with just being on Xbox One?
We've always said that we've only ever announced Xbox One and PC and Mac, and that's kind of the way that went. So who knows? But we wanted to being the three-man team, we wanted to focus on as few platforms as possible, just because certification, that's like, as a process that takes like months to go through, and to do that on multiple platforms all at once. Like, I think with Sony, it's kind of like three launches, because you have to launch in each territory separately. And those are three different processes. So we knew that we couldn't do all of them at once. So yeah, we wanted to definitely like focus on Xbox, just because that was the way our manpower kind of limited us.
Do you think you'll stay an Xbox kind of company in the future, or are you open to going elsewhere?
I don't know. We've definitely had a great experience with the Xbox team, so.
And you do have 3 years to decide.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the kind of game we launch too. If we make a mobile game, then we're not obviously going to be working with Xbox. But I don't know. Windows Phone, yeah.
I love Windows Phone.
And then Windows 10 now, where you can make universal games now that work Windows 10 and Xbox. So I don't know. Hopefully the next game doesn't come out in 3 years. Maybe it's before that. But yeah, I definitely want to kind of work out what kind of game we want to
just make. Do a weekend game jam, crank something out in 48 hours, and release it in November.
That's what we thought we were doing last time. We did this prototype for Lovers in 48 hours, and we had that core concept there, and then 3 years later, it was finished.
Is it proud, though, after 3 years to finally release it out into the world?
It's like, I don't want to, I don't know. Like, it's, working on something for 3 years is just a crazy amount of time. And so when we released it, you kind of don't know what to think. You have all these, like, every single emotion is happening all at once. And it's so overwhelming, and it's, you know, at one time it's the most amazing thing you've ever done. At another time, it's the worst mistake you've ever made. and it's constantly like cycling like that. I think we're like 2 weeks out now of launch, and I still feel like I'm still going through these kind of roller coasters of emotions, just because, you know, everything is always changing. Every day someone's discovering the game for the first time, and you know, they're either, they love it or they hate it, or they send you like these awesome emails telling you like how they played it with their daughter, and their whole family loves it. Or,
and you have to do interviews with shitty little podcasts like mine.
lots of talking about the game. It's crazy.
Has there been any sales figures on the game yet? Do you know if it's meeting your expectations, if it's doing really well?
Yeah, we've definitely I've been searching, or we've been going through that kind of obsessively now. But yeah, it was kind of, it was meeting our expectations in some ways. So, but you know, you always want the, you know, it to be this giant breakout hit. So, yeah, we kind of were expecting where we're at, for better or for worse, but, yeah, it always can be better. Millions of people.
It could always be a slow burn too.
Yeah. Yeah. You want the long fat tail, I guess.
So what are you playing today? We already talked about what you were playing in development, but what are you playing now? What are you excited for this fall?
I think the 2 days after the game launched, I went and bought Metal Gear Solid 5. So that's what I'm playing with right now. It's a really cool game. Like I kind of gave up on Metal Gear after the second one, kind of watched my roommate play the third one. But then when Metal Gear Solid 5 came out, I kind of started to get like, I liked the idea of it. So yeah, I've been playing that. I put probably 10 or 15 hours into it, and kind of, I feel like I've only just dented, like I'm on the seventh mission, so it feels like I haven't even really started the game yet.
Yeah, I've heard the game is absolutely huge, so.
So I hope I can make it through the entirety of the game, just because that's like, be able to play a game for 80 hours, that's, I don't get to do that very often.
What about later this fall? Anything else coming out that you're excited for?
I kind of want to pick up Hockey, because every few years I like to either get like NHL or FIFA or something. I play it for a couple years, so I feel like it's NHL's turn right now. So.
Well, if you're an Xbox One owner, have you checked out EA Access?
Yeah, that's not for me, but.
I don't know. Yeah, all the games you get on that thing, it's so friggin' worth it. But anyway, yeah. we're over 50 minutes now. Is there anything else that you wanted to say about the game or about your studio, anything like that? You have the floor. This is all you.
Wizzle wazzle. Yeah, I don't know. We're making games is really hard, and we're not from this industry. We came from other industries, and so this whole situation releasing the game these last 2 years has been like one of the best experiences of my life. Just kind of the people we've met, watching someone play your game for the first time, watching people enjoy the game together. It's kind of it's been a really awesome experience, and I don't know. It's both the hardest thing I've ever done, most challenging thing, and the best and most amazing thing.
Nice. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. I want to congratulate you guys on the game launch and the quality of the game. I absolutely love it. Everyone I've talked to absolutely loves it, or they're dying to pick it up. So I think you guys have a winner on your hands, and I hope it continues to sell like crazy.
Cool, thanks.
Do you have any final words or a little one-liner to end the interview with us?
Oh, man, that's the worst time.
That was perfect.
Score!